Appaloosa Radio offers dry, wheat, stubble and original audio story. Chapter 6. I have been Becky Blake's friend for almost 40 years. Yet, I never knew about her experience at the Gun Emporium until just a couple of years ago. She was my employee and I had noticed her extreme depression. It impacted her performance at the bank. I was afraid that I might have to let her go. Then, on what seemed the very next day, she came to work full of energy and enthusiasm. Her previously poor performance skyrocketed. I did not know what had brought the change, but I was happy to see it. If I remember it correctly, it was about a month later that I first heard the name Brian. Becky was always somewhat secretive about her relationship with him. I am now not even sure that his real name was Brian. I once asked her what his background was. She would only say that they had met at the roller rink. He may have been the manager or someone who worked there. Once I heard Becky tell one of the other tellers that his name was Brian Skittles. Now that is a very unusual name. I think Becky made it up, maybe while she was looking at a bag of Skittles candy. Anyway, the other teller was good in calligraphy and made Becky a special piece with his name on it. Once she started going to the skating rink, Becky's weight dropped dramatically. She also began taking care of her hair and wearing makeup. She transformed from frumpy to downright cute. For Becky, things went well for several months, then 3 days before Christmas, she told me that she needed to talk privately. I suggested we go out for lunch, it would be my treat. Over her Chinese chicken salad, Becky told me that she was pregnant, and that Brian was the father. After she told him, he disappeared. You know, he was a deserter from the U.S. Marines. He had been drafted into the Marines during the Vietnam War, but when the chance arose, he deserted. He has been on the run ever since. Where does that leave you? Well, I'll have his baby, but I can't put his name on the birth certificate. That'd give them a way to find him. But, Becky, you make so little money. He needs to contribute child support. I'm not going to ask him to do that. I'll have the baby here since I have medical insurance. Then, I'll go home, back to Gary, to my mom and dad's farm. We'll live there. Becky's baby was a boy whom she named Eric John, after her father and grandfather. She left the name of the biological father blank but gave the baby Parnell as its last name. Eric John Parnell and his mother Becky Blake moved back to Gary. I'll always remember the girls' only trip we did to the John Denver concert at the Fillmore Auditorium. The four of his carpooled to avoid paying the exorbitant parking prices. The lot was about 6 blocks away. We did not initially realize that we had entered a very sleazy neighborhood. But, we had Janine with us, and she promised us that her mace spray was at the ready. The concert was terrific. It felt very up close and personal. We almost forgot the other 11,000 fans. On our way back to our car, we saw a homeless woman across busy Colfax Street. She seemed to be having trouble standing. Then, she started to cross the street, but suddenly fell hard, face forward. We could hear her skull crack as it hit the cold pavement. Becky Blake was the first to respond, running across the busy street, dodging cars and a semi-truck. Once there, she began to minister to the woman's wounds, turning her over and wiping her face with Becky's own scarf. The rest of us gathered around her. We could see she was bleeding in multiple places. She appeared unconscious, but she still moaned audibly. I noticed that she was wearing a dress which had pulled way up. I could see her legs filled with lesions, most of which had happened well before this fall. Seeing her with her dress pulled up, Becky did something that still surprises me. Remember, the concert was in February and we were in Denver, just 2 days after a major snowstorm. The wind was blowing, and it was cold. Becky Blake took off her very nice coat and laid it over the homeless woman lying in the middle of the busy street. Janine had run into a convenience store and told the clerk to call 911. A woman had fallen and she was bleeding. maybe a concussion. The Denver paramedics were there in just a few minutes. They began to provide the homeless woman with medical care, and then loaded her onto a gurney and rolled her into the ambulance. They grabbed Becky's coat and threw it over the homeless woman. I expected Becky to speak up, to say, "Please leave my coat." She didn't. Later, when I asked her why she had not spoken up, asking the paramedics to leave her coat, she simply said, she needed it more than me. Here was Becky Blake standing in the cold, at night, watching her nice coat go away. I could see her shivering, but she did not say anything. A couple days later, Becky went to a second-hand store and bought another coat. This coat was not nice. It had tears and stains, holes in the pockets. It had a wild floral, almost hippie pattern. Certainly, not something that a woman as conservatively dressing as Becky Blake would wear. The worst thing about this coat was that it had a distinctive smell. We all could tell immediately whenever Becky came in, wearing that coat. Smelly. Ugly. Stained. And, I did not know until many years later, it had been an expensive purchase. It was winter and this was the only coat left in the second-hand store. They priced it as if it had been new. Becky Blake and I have been friends for nearly 40 years. I knew that she had had a tough life. Very few of her plans came through as she had envisioned. For her 70th birthday, I wanted to do a special celebration. I wanted people to share positive memories they had of Becky. It was pretty easy to find people in Geary who were willing to share memories. However, I was hoping for even more. I hoped that maybe her older sons might also share some of their memories. Of course, I had an ulterior motive. I had hoped to reunite Becky with her older sons. I arranged to have lunch with her middle son, Andrew, who was now a mortgage broker. I had often seen his commercials on television. Andrew was gracious and attentive. He told me that his father, Jeff, had recently retired as the Arvada Chief of Police. I knew that Jeff Blake had been my town's chief of police. Since I had often seen his photograph in our local newspaper, he seemed well respected and liked. He stayed well past the usual retirement age. Andrew told me that Lisa and Jeff had sold their $2 million home in Cherry Hills and had moved to a gated golf course community outside Colorado Springs, right off the 16th green. When the PGA tournament comes, they can see everything from their patio. Andrew's older brother, Adrian, had developed health issues and had been forced into early retirement. He was now living in Scottsdale, also proximal to a golf course. Andrew's youngest brother was now a college professor in Georgia. I asked Andrew to share any positive memories that he had of Becky. "I have no positive memories of my biological mother. She was the most despicable human being I have ever known. She beat us with belts, locked us into small closets, and then abandoned us. If my dad had not found Lisa, he might have committed suicide. Abominable woman." I was taken aback by his intensity. What he said did not match the woman I knew. Still, I was here to bring peace, not to inflame past emotions. "I've always been curious. How did your dad meet Lisa?" "He met her at my baseball game. She came because she has a nephew on one of the other teams." I let the untruth pass. I decided to tell Andrew about Becky's giving her coat to the homeless woman. Before I had finished telling the story, he snorted. "That is so stupid. Why would she do anything like that for a drunken bum? She was so stupid." I told him that it had always reminded me of the Bible story about the Good Samaritan. Andrew snorted again. "No, not anything like that. I remember her wearing that awful, ugly coat. It had this incredibly bad smell. It stunk up everything. It had these brown stains. Frankly, I thought someone had used it for toilet paper." He concluded, "It was embarrassing. She was always embarrassing us. We were all better off without her. Lisa is my mother. I love her and she loves us. I want nothing whatsoever to do with my biological mother. Nothing. Nothing. Becky Blake and her son Eric returned to the Parnell family farm in Gary. Within a few weeks, Becky had a job as the manager of a 40,000 chicken egg ranch. Every morning, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, she would rise at 4:30 a.m., fix her breakfast, fix her lunch for work, and make Eric's lunch for school. Then, she would wake Eric, give him a kiss, and drive to the egg ranch. There she put on her sanitized coveralls, her special hair net, and her latex gloves and began the morning's task of pushing a large egg cart through the rows and rows of chicken cages. Cages were stacked six high on both sides of each row. As she passed, she would gather eggs and place them in a special plastic container on the cart. Becky had two employees to help. Both were Mexicans who spoke no English. Becky spoke no Spanish. But, since the routine was the same each day, there was seldom a need to communicate. At about 10 o'clock, after they were done gathering the morning eggs, they would begin the process of washing them, using the special plastic containers as a kind of wash tub for the automated washing machine. Once the eggs were washed, then they would individually candle them, to avoid bloody or misformed eggs, and hand-pack them into their cardboard packing cartons. By about 11:30, they would be done, and they would take a long lunch break. Becky would do her computer entry. Then she would eat her lunch at the desk. Once she had finished, she would use the computer to play solitaire, hundreds and hundreds of games. The two Mexican employees would enjoy their own lunch under the ranch's only tree, sleeping and enjoying rancheria music. Then, about 2 o'clock, they would begin the afternoon egg gathering. Only this time, they would leave the eggs in the special plastic containers in the refrigerator, ready to be washed, candled and packed the next day. At about 5 o'clock, Becky and her two employees would lock things up and head home. Three times a week, a large refrigerated semi-truck would arrive at the egg ranch, pick up a load of eggs, and hand Becky a check. She would place the check and her computer reports in a FedEx envelope and send it to Omaha where the company's headquarters was. Twice a month, she would receive a FedEx package back, this time with checks for Becky and her employees. Same routine, every day. About every 2 weeks for nearly 40 years, I would receive a letter from Becky Blake. They were never short letters. On average, I would guess, Becky's letters ran 10 to 12 pages. Always handwritten in her beautiful handwriting. Each letter told about happenings in and around Gary. She might also include a recipe that she had seen on a cooking show on television. However, the vast majority of every letter was about her son Eric. What he had done. What he had said. How fast he was growing. His boyhood injuries. Her worries and prayers for him. Once or twice a year, my husband and I would drive down to Gary, pulling our trailer, just to talk face to face. My husband loved visiting the Parnell farm and he became a special fishing buddy with Grandpa Eric. After one trip, my husband told me, "I think young Eric has the makings of a farmer." He was right. Once Grandpa Eric could no longer handle things, grandson Eric John stepped in and took over. The transition was so natural almost no one noticed it. In all the years that she managed the egg ranch, Becky made it her absolute priority to spend her time after work with her son. Evenings were Mom and Eric time. It was play time, talking time, story fantasy time, I love you so much time. There was nothing that Eric wanted or needed that his mother would not get for him. Yet, he was never spoiled. He was a young man with few wants and almost no desires. In his quiet way, he was a success. Secure with who he was. Unpretentious, but compassionate. Returning love and respect with love and respect. When I told the now manly Eric John Parnell that I was planning a 70th birthday surprise for his mother, he was elated. He gave me all the support I needed. His only problem was keeping it from his mother. He told her everything. His only regret was that his grandpa Eric wouldn't be there. Grandpa Eric had died the year before. Eric arranged for both the Geary High School marching band and its cheerleading squad to be there. He invited the mayor, who brought a special proclamation from the city council. He wanted to bring a traveling carnival to the farm, but their schedule wouldn't permit it. The moments I vividly remember were when various people told of kind deeds that Becky had done. There were a lot of them. Some were from long ago and some were very recent. Of course, I shared about the homeless woman and Becky's coat. Her reaction surprised me. It was just a spur-of-the-moment thing. Never gave it any thought. Just did it. Then, after a long pause, a broad smile came on her face. I think my sons really hated that ugly coat. Just then, Eric piped in, using a hickey radio voice, one taken from the old K.O.R.N. Farmer joke skits, which were both on TV shows like Hee Haw and now collected on comedy CDs, that were sold on late night TV.
Hey, Ma, how ugly was the deer coat?
Well, son, it made the goat bloat.
And made the big pig belch up his slop.
So ugly, it made the corn pop.
It kept the crows from crowing.
And the bear from yawning.
Hey, Ma, that don't rhyme.
Son, not rhyming ain't no crime.
Why, Ma?
Well, son, rhyming costs extra. Like dip chocolate on a cone.
He stopped and looked frazzled. Eric laughed. Sorry, just can't think of any more. Becky was quick to jump in.
Well, maybe next time. But, with my only dime, no rhyme.
Then everyone laughed and cheered. Obviously, this was a game that the two had played together for years, and they loved doing it. Before the party ended, I asked Becky to share what she thought were the most memorable events of her life. She hesitated, and became very serious. No hint of a smile or a laugh. The most memorable event of my life happened in a gun emporium store. I was completing the paperwork to buy a gun. Not just any gun, but an assault rifle. Then, the voice and presence of Jehovah, Lord God, Most High, surrounded me. It encapsulated me. It said, "Mrs. Becky Blake, wife of Jeffrey Robert Blake, thou shall not commit murder. Thou shall not take the blood of innocents. I am a God of love, not hate. Love one another. In my name, love one another." The Lord God Jehovah intervened directly and personally in my life. He stopped me from murdering my children and my husband. His hand of love and mercy have been around me ever since. I am blessed, blessed beyond measure. I am blessed, blessed beyond measure.